Hello and welcome to Talking Property with CBRE. I'm your host, Catherine House, and in this episode, I'm sitting down with Henry Chin, CBRE's Global Head of Research. Henry has travelled all the way from Dallas to Down Under to give us his insights on the global trends that are reshaping the real estate sector. Now, this is the first time that we've done a podcast in front of a live audience, so welcome, Sydney. We're also streaming this episode to our offices across Australia and New Zealand, and we're filming for YouTube, so I am a little nervous, but I can't think of anyone better to share the stage with than Henry. Welcome to Talking Property.
Thank you for having me here. I am nervous but excited as well.
So before we get into it, Henry, we've known each other for a long time.
Just yesterday.
Since you headed the APAC research team in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You moved to Dallas 2 years ago.
Yeah.
To take on a global role.
Yeah.
How was that move? How are you finding Texas? And I believe you still don't own a pair of cowboy boots.
No, it's not for me. I don't have a cowboy hat. They're ugly. And I do not have a cowboy boot because I have heard R.M. Williams is nicer, right?
Absolutely.
I'll take a look later on. And so, yeah, the life there is very, very different. And I enjoy my work there because the market is so big. And then, but life is very different. I'm missing people here in Australia because I can walk on the street. The food is excellent. The people are excellent. In Dallas, I don't see any human beings on the street. So that's something I miss.
Well, you have had a very hectic schedule since you arrived in Sydney, including doing the keynote at the Property Council's Property Leaders Summit.
Yep.
Have there been any surprises for you in the questions that you're getting from clients, particularly against this backdrop of politics and policy that's playing out here?
Oh my God, you guys love to talk about politics all the time. I can tell you that in the US, we don't talk about the politics as much as you guys do. And politics create noises, but actually we look at the real estate economy, it's all back to the fundamentals. And that one thing surprised me is the hunger for your Australian real estate professionals to understand the global real estate dynamics is so real. And I can tell you that only been in the US for 20 months, I can talk about US markets. That just tells you real estate is not rocky science. It's so easy and so simple. And the trend, what we are seeing in the US, in Australia, all linked. So this is fascinating to be here and to share with my journey and share with what I see on the global real estate market.
So talking about that global perspective, there is a lot of macro noise right now.
Yeah.
Interest rates, sticky inflation, the ongoing Middle East conflict. How resilient has real estate been against that backdrop?
I have to say, let's revert back. 20 months ago, when I moved to the US, I was very excited, very excited. The reason was, you know, come on, interest rates are coming down, economy is recovery, and the real estate should recovery as well. So my life should be relatively easy. But think about it. Last year, what do we have? The trade war, the tariff. This year, what do we have? The conflict. And now I also have the AI can replace me at some point. And then so you can see all those noises are making my life a lot more challenging, a lot more exciting as well. But if you're looking at our business performance and our real estate performance, I have to say 2025 was resiliently strong for our business and real estate. I think the momentum continued to come back on the commercial real estate spaces in 2026. And we might see some speed bump, but nevertheless, recovery is on the way.
So last time you visited Australia, Henry, you made a memorable comment that people continue to bring up, that you thought that we were in la-la land when it came to asset repricing.
Yes.
Has your view changed?
You guys might not be the champion of La La Land. I know Andrew Roy is laughing now. And you guys are coming to the third places. Now, number one goes to Hong Kong, two go to Singapore, Australia is still number three. And the reason I say that is I was loud and clear during the Property Leaders Summit yesterday. Guys, you have repriced, but reprice is not enough. And you can continue to reprice, underlying, in my personal point of view, you need to reduce your incentive. globally, I have never seen a market provide an incentive for 30 to 50%. It's shocking. And that translates into all the valuation issues there. So therefore, the market is coming back, flight to quality, occupier want to occupy the building like where we are. Therefore, you have to reduce the incentive. And then therefore, I have to say, la la la, number three, if you don't repricing, if you don't reduce your incentive, you might come back to number one.
So taking that into account, how are global investors viewing Australia and New Zealand right now compared to other markets like the US?
Okay, I can tell you that when I was talking to the global capital allocators, number one, people want to look at the repricing, play the cycle. Real estate is all about cyclical investment. Given the current situation we are on now, I have to say US is number one because US has repricing so substantially. A US economy is really resilient and our interest rate somehow is lower than your Australian one. And so therefore US become number one. And Australia, if you look at the Asia Pacific per se, people want to invest into Japan, Australia, India, yes and no, Korea, Hong Kong / Singapore. So that's the market they are going to invest within Asia Pacific. But within the Asia Pacific market, all the money go to Japan, as of now. But on a contrarian view, I would say I will sell Japan. I will buy more in Australia. But in order for global investor coming to buy Australia, we need to see more repricing, we need to see more rental growth. Unfortunately, it's not enough just yet. Once we've been through the cycle, I think you're going to see more of the global capital coming to Australia.
So one of the mega trends that you've been talking about with clients revolves around supply and demand. How is that impacting real estate performance right now?
I think we love to read newspapers, and but especially younger generation always reading newspaper all the time. If you think about newspapers, it's always on the negative side because that's why you get your readership, right? But I want everyone to remember real estate is a function of demand and supply. Demand is weakening because of the volatility we've been through, right? But we don't have a supply. You know, think about it. Globally, we have no supply at all. In the offices, the retails, industrial logistics, we just don't have enough supply. So once we are back to the recovery track, come on, there's no supply. The only way to go, price is going to go up. And also, you know, vacancy is going to come down. So therefore, when I was talking to the occupiers, I said to occupiers, yes, you still got a bargaining power, but you need to act fast. When I talk to the investors, I think, well, things are not as bad as you thought because we don't have a supply. So at some point, we're going to see price going to go up.
So while we're talking about occupiers, there has been this ongoing flight to quality globally and across sectors.
Yes.
How is it all playing out globally, do you think?
Yeah, you can think about this. No much of supply coming to the market going forward. And every single occupiers, retailers, you know, office occupiers and 3PLs manufacturers, they all want to be the best quality buildings in the good locations. And then it's coming through. So therefore, you can see the good quality buildings, the vacancy rates trend down, you know, incentive should be lower and the rent should go up. And that is translating to the stronger momentum for the performers. So good quality buildings in the key locations, we will continue to see the better performance, like average commodity stock, unfortunately. Mm. That's the reality we are facing now.
So if we move to AI, it's in the news every day. And I know when we were talking earlier, you said that you were preparing a paper in the US on how this is going to impact different employment sectors. Which sectors are the most vulnerable, do you think?
Me, a researcher. So a lot of people thought the researcher can be replaced by AI, but I disagree because I think about the AI and I was looking at the productivity on the global economies. And surprisingly, on the mature economy, G7, including Australia, we have lost our productivities for the past 25 years. And that was a surprise to me, actually. But when I have a deeper dive about the productivity per se, we have to say we're also losing the populations. The population growth is not as strong as it used to be. So therefore, our productivity has declined over the past 25 years. As a result, AI does come into the market at the right time, right? So we need to have a better productivities. And fortunately, some industries we are facing the tough challenges. So repetitive back-end work can be a lot more efficient by using AI. So those kind of repetitive jobs might be more exposed. But think about the other way. A lot of people are always arguing we have issues about financials, legals, accountants, right? But you're thinking about your workforces. Those professionals, they tend to be higher skill. So if you got a higher skill, you're easier for you to adopt the new AI. So therefore, it's going to enhance your productivity on that part. Another story I want to tell you, more on a personal conversation. My friend is a radiologist. Come on, he's a doctor, right? So therefore, he shouldn't worry, but he worries so much about his job. He was telling me the machine can read the diagram better than him. I said, that's your problem, right? But no, it's putting a joke aside. But I said to him, actually, no, that means the machine can read a lot of diagram for you, but you still need a human in the loop to diagnose the things. And also, in the past, you only see 3-4 patients in the morning. But now, because of AI, you probably can see 10 patients in the morning. So therefore, you can see more patients, the quantity will be larger, and the prices should be lower. So your economy scale should be greater. So therefore, we shouldn't be so worried about AI. It's actually helping us more efficient. The scale should be bigger. That's how I read it.
Well, we can't talk about AI without talking about data centers. They're also in the news here all the time and globally. But you said something interesting in a client meeting that I was at, and it was around that data centers that were built 3 or 4 years ago and now could be essentially obsolete. Mm-hmm. How does the market adapt to that and the fast change?
Wow, it's... If you're reading on the newspaper, everything, demand and supply is definitely an imbalance now. Huge demand for data centers, not enough supply. So that is a good for investor for real estate. But the biggest challenge now we are seeing is power accessibility. So power becomes front and center of everyone's mind. How can you get a power to fit into the data center? And I think a lot of public just do not want to have a data center next to us, you know, because they worry about all those kind of issues.
Not in my backyard.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mind data center, but just not closer to me.
Yes.
And the second one is investor coming to that space that they want to make the returns. The biggest worry is, as of now, it makes a lot more sense. But if I build a data center, hold a data center for 5 years down the road, I don't know who is going to buy it. I don't know what the price is going to look like. So that adds on a lot of risk. Nevertheless, if you are a data center operator on a bigger scale, I think it's going to be doing so well. But the biggest worry is you only operate 1 or 2 data centers, you don't have a scale. I think you're going to be facing some tough operational risk going forward.
So while we're getting into sectors, industry and logistics, you shared some interesting views on that in some of your meetings and how APAC is advancing relative to other markets. Tell us your thoughts on industrial and logistics.
I have to say Asia Pacific industrial logistics, we are well ahead of our US automations, everything. You guys do the better job. We do the better job. No, you guys, we, okay. We do the better job than the US. And funny enough, given the demand supply dynamics, I think we were quite negative in the US because the US got an oversupply situation in 2024. However, and given the current situation, trade war, reshoring, manufacturing, all the things we are seeing on the newspaper, funnily enough, occupiers are coming back to take more leases, particularly for modern facility stock. So modern facility stock seems to be outperformed than the older stock. And so therefore, I have to say, the modern facility stock, particularly people pay attention for power because you're competing with data center, automation. And the third one is cold storages. That's the trend what we are seeing in the US and Europe. I have to say, in Australia, automation, you guys are pretty much ahead. We also had a decent cold storages facilities here. The only thing is missing, it's the power. So going forward, you are going to see the logistics stock, which was built after 2020, will outperform the older stock. And that's what we are seeing in the U.S. So sooner or later, you're going to see U.S., we're talking about oversupply since 2024. But we do believe 2027 become undersupply because everyone's a flight to quality. So this is something we are looking. That's what our current view is.
And what about retail? What are you seeing playing out on the global stage when it comes to the retail market? We've seen a really strong rebound in investor interest here.
Yeah.
Against a lack of supply.
Yeah. Everyone knows me, I'm a shopaholic, right? I love shopping. I have to
just say, not for cowboy boots.
They're ugly, actually. They are not cheap, by the way. And so I think retail is coming from zero on the way to hero. And the fundamental is getting stronger because of the lack of a supply. And based on our forecast, globally, retail and offices are outperforming the other asset classes. And so most of retail and offices got a stronger total return coming from the stronger rental growth. And but I have to say, retail is not for everyone. And most of retailers, they want to fly to quality, they are expansionary mode, they want to looking at the prime stock, that's limited supply. So that's what we're seeing. But think about consumers. I am old, so I don't shop in TikTok, but clearly the TikTok becomes such an influential channel for retailers, for consumers to do that. So going to the retail is going to be understanding the consumer is the front and center of everyone's mind. So I have to say, in Asia Pacific, we are the head. And then I think the Asia Pacific research team, Samir, they're creating 3A and 3F. So 3A for retail winning formula should be air, art, and amazed. That's why you have the three components for people to come to your shopping center. 3F is a fitness. I think America need more fitness. And family and pet, and because I think the family pet is very important for the modern life. And the other F is F&Bs. So F&Bs, I think Australians, 12 years ago, you guys was asking me, Henry, did you eat dinner in shopping center? I remember. I said, of course, that's a stupid question. But you guys didn't eat dinner in shopping center. But now look at you. You guys have been dinner in shopping center. So F&B option is also very, very important. So the winning formula for retail is 3A and 3F. Retail is from zero on the way to hero.
And all about experience.
All about experiences and flight to quality.
So if we flip back to productivity, mm-hmm. and that drop in productivity, mm-hmm. there's still a lot of discussion about hybrid working, return to office. Is that playing into the productivity argument?
Yes and no. Come on. Globally, only two nations talk about return to work. You guys are one of them. I cannot resist to tease the Victoria government. It's killing me. And I don't know how, you know, of course you ask me, hybrid working is here to stay. But thinking about going forward, the people who is going to be outperformed, outstanding in the future is the people who has a strong communication skills. By working from home, you're talking to your pet. Sorry to say that.
I've got two pets. I talk to them all the time.
Oh my God. But they don't react to you, right? So therefore, I do think about hybrid working is here to stay. But I do think about people should come to the office more often. 5 days a week is too much, to be frank. 3 or 4 days a week, engage with a colleague, talking to your clients, is actually enhance our productivity and also stimulate our brand. And I think this is something is very, very important. But guys, don't be so harsh on yourself. I think we're looking at productivity in G7 versus Australia. You guys are right in the middle. I think Italians are negative. If you are...
It's because they like their siestas.
And they love to drink and sleep and shop. Anyways, drama too much. Anyways, you guys are doing a decent job. But again, thinking about it, all coming to work together, I think it will be a lot stronger.
So I tagged along with you to a Charter Hall presentation
yep.
that you did. And you said one of the hardest things about being a researcher at the moment is forecasting human behaviour. given everything that's happening in the world right now. How do you deal with that from a research perspective?
We always relate back to the fact. And also, you know, because we do not have a crystal ball to forecast the future. So basically, sometimes what we do is to look at the scenarios. This is our base case. This is upside and downside. So that will give the client the stronger view about what they think a possibility is going to happen here or there. Just a different examples. A lot of people were asking me about the oil price. And I have to say that the change for oil prices is a move away from fundamentals. We get it. We get it. But you can see all the oil price volatility coming from Twitter. The reactions coming from Twitter. So therefore, it's very hard to forecast. So what we did, we look at a historical event. We look at the historical event, okay, which has a profound impact for oil prices. What we hope for is 75% of the event is going to, like, 6 months down the road, we are going to back to historical norm. And the pre-event crisis, that level. So that's why it's very, very important to relate to the fact and then provide the scenarios so client can react to the different scenarios. So that's what we're doing a lot these days.
So if you had to leave our audience with one key message, be they an owner, an occupier, or a developer, what should they be paying closest attention to in the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, don't listen to politicians. That's number one. And don't read too much on the newspapers, because the newspapers always love to have a sensational headline in order for you to click. That's the readership, right? So don't forget that real estate is all about the function of a demand and supply. If I am the occupier now, I probably will, looking at my portfolios, some places I'm going to turn back, some places I want to expand, because of flight to quality is everyone wants. You can see no many of a quality stock are available now. So as of now, you still can charge it. You know, the landlord is going to give you 30, 40, 50% incentive in Australia. At some point, it's going to turn and you're going to pay higher. So if I'm an occupier, I will act fast now. If I am the investors, funny enough, everyone wants to do retail. Everyone wants to do multifamilies in the US. Everyone wants to do industrial. But I think real estate is always a play the cycle. Don't always think about buy, also thinking about sell. I will try to sell some of the logistic holdings because you make a decent return, then the next one to enjoy that way. I will also start to think about, should I buy offices? Should I buy retails? There's no supply.
Everyone's talking about whether it's the time to get back into office.
I think it's time to get back to the offices. And so that's the investor's mindset. And the other one is thinking about higher for longer. Our daily life, the interest rate is so high. The mortgage is so high, right? So translate to the investors. It's only probably sometimes they don't buy properties, they just buy credit. Credit might give you the better returns on that side as well. So all of real estate, everything's all about play the cycle. Also understand the structural changes. We are getting older and older. But do we need a senior housing? When I get old, I do want to live in a senior housing. Why? Because they got the facilities, you know, people can look after me, right? You don't want your kids to look after you. So that will create a demand down the road. So thinking about those structural changes on our daily life, they can create a demand for real estate.
Well, it is always entertaining to talk to you, Henry. You've had a great trip down to Sydney, and don't leave it so long next time.
I love to be in Sydney and I love the food. By the way, your fish market is excellent.
Oh, the new one, yes.
The new one.
Amazing. Well, a big thanks to our live audience for coming along today. There's clearly a lot happening in global real estate now, from interest rates and capital flows to AI, productivity. But what I've taken from today's conversation is that opportunity is still there. It's just more nuanced. And understanding where demand, supply, and quality are shifting will be key. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in. If you're not a subscriber, make sure to do so you don't miss our next episode, which is our Q3 House View with Samir Chopra and Phil Rowland. Until next time.